Prologue. Brothers. He rolled onto his front, coughing blood between broken teeth. His chest dragged across the hard, grassy earth before he felt hands reach down for him again.
Withdraw, then return.
The words ran through his mind as hands tugged at his torn caftan. That was the first principle of the Kinzan way of war. To unbalance, to force into overreach, to hit on the counter. Tamu pulled his knees up sharply and pushed back against the clutching fingers. He heard a grunt of surprise as his wiry body thrust upwards, sending one of his assailants tumbling. He twisted around, loosing a tight, balled fist and feeling it connect. Another grunt, another body swaying away. Something hit his temple, knocking him down again. He saw the grass beneath him blur. His face thudded into the turf and he tasted flakes of grit between clenched teeth. More blows came in, kicks to his legs, thumps against his exposed back. He writhed, trying to find a way back up. A hot, wet pain started up at the back of his head. One of them stooped, thinking him finished, reaching for the scruff of his neck, ready to drag him up and cast him down again, in the way the Talskar did to demonstrate mastery over an opponent.
Withdraw, then return.
Tamu waited, just for a fraction of a second. Then he bucked again, arching and squirming his body like an eel, swinging up and round, grabbing his assailant by his chest. He looked up into a face full of surprise and laughed. Then he jabbed his head, butting against a looming brow, watching the blood speckle out and his captor reel from the impact. He thought then that he might break free of them, scatter the group and somehow tear away, back down the dry river course and to safety. It proved a fleeting hope. He was grabbed again, more securely this time. Two hands at his shoulders gripped him fast. He was hurled onto his back. He saw three faces hovering over him, each one bruised and angry. Another kick came in, hard into his midriff. He curled up, gasping.
Enough!
They stopped immediately. They paused. They turned their heads. Uncertainty rippled through them. Tamu lifted his head. His vision was blurry. He saw one of them scamper off, breaking into a limping run. Then the others followed. Two heavy-set men from Alju's hearth, wearing the red sashes of the old man's keshig. They didn't look back. As they ran, they picked up speed, as if some strange panic had suddenly kindled in them. Tamu felt blood trickle down the back of his neck. He tried to rise and failed. The wind felt cold against his clothes, despite the sun being high in the sky. He couldn't see the one who'd spoken. Lights glared painfully off the plains, dazzling him. He pushed himself up onto his elbows.
"What quarrel did they have with you?" came the voice.
Tamu twisted his head towards the sound. A man walked out of the haze, his outline shimmering in the clear air. He was tall and broad, incredibly tall, incredibly broad, and clad in bone armor plates that glittered in the brightness. He carried a staff topped with a skull and wore an elaborate hood over his bare head. Only then was Tamu afraid. Where had the giant come from? The grassland had been empty a minute ago, just him and the three others, grappling and running across the wind-ruffled Altak. It took some force of will to reply.
"I do not know," Tamu said.
None of the man's features moved, but Tamu detected amusement.
"What quarrel did they have with you?"
the man asked again, inflecting the words identically. Tamu felt dizzy. The trickle of blood slowed but did not stop. The man made no move to help him.
"I stole Aduan,"
Tamu said, opting for the truth. He'd opened Alju's corral in the night, leading three of his steeds away and taking them down the river to Erdal's hearth. That had earned him a gulp of fermented milk and a slice of belly meat. Worth a beating.
"Three grown men against one boy," the man observed. "You hurt them almost as badly as they hurt you."
Despite the pain, Tamu grinned. He knew he had. The man crouched down, coming closer to his level and looking at Tamu closely. Tamu saw a long, jagged scar on his tan cheek. The man had an unusual aroma, and a faint hum came from his body, as if a beast murmured somewhere in the folds of his cloak. His eyes were strange, golden, soft, and glistening. They were like an animal's eyes.
"What is your name?" he asked.
"Tamu."
"How old are you?"
12 years.
The man pursed his lips.
8 in Terran, he murmured. "Not too late."
Tamu frowned.
"Not too late for what?"
The man rose to his feet again.
"Come with me."
Tamu hesitated. His head was beginning to ache.
"Come where?"
For some reason he thought of his mother, his father, his brothers, huddled in the gear, down in the valley, busy with 100 mundane things. They would not miss him until dusk, perhaps longer.
"Do not question," said the hooded man. "Do as I say."
Then, for the first time, he really smiled. The gesture was not without warmth, his bright white teeth flashing between leathery dark lips.
"Unless you think you could take me, too."
Tamu didn't move. He tensed his body, just as he had done before the others had caught up with him.
"Withdraw, then return," he thought.
Rain angled down from a slate-dark sky, hammering and cold. The wide training ground was open to the elements, and the water bounced from the rockcrete, glittering under flood lumens arranged around the perimeter. In the distance rose spires. Iphigenus, Telion, Morvo. Their ranked lines of hablites were faint, blurred by rain and the night and the atmospheric haze. A line of 2 dozen boys stood shivering in the downpour, each dressed only in a grey shift. The youngest might have been 7, the oldest no more than 9. They stared directly ahead, chins jutting with determination, water running down their tight faces. Haran shivered just like the others. Despite his origin in Skandmark, his lean frame made him feel the cold. His fingernails pressed into the palms of his hands as he clenched his fists, determined not to lose control. On either side of him, he could sense the other boys doing the same. Trevi, Amada, Kennet, all steeling themselves against the freeze, the dark, the fatigue, the nerves.
"No backward step," he thought to himself,
remembering the words of the man who had taken him from his home in the frozen north and brought him halfway across Terra to the training centres in Mimando. He'd learned later that those words were a credo of the organisation, something whispered by the Battle Brothers to themselves before battle. It was said that the Legion had never retreated. He wanted to believe that. If true, it made them even more glorious, even more worthy of worship.
"The test is of endurance," said the instructor.
A severe-faced man with cropped black hair, standing to one side of the line, barely looking at them. Haran had hated him on arrival. They all had. Now he felt nothing towards him, just a vague sense that he was one more obstacle amid a life of obstacles. For the last 2 months, Haran had been tested, tried, pommeled, moulded, degraded and exhausted. The trials no longer hurt him, but they did remind him of the goal. He was close now. After so long, he was so very close. The instructor glanced upwards, and rain spattered against his face. He looked sourly at the heavens.
"You will be observed. Do not aid your brothers. This is an individual exercise. Begin with the gong."
Haran tried to loosen up. He looked out across the rockcrete arena before them. A long, looping track ran around the edge of it. Obstacles stood in the way. Ramps, pits, walls, waterlogged tunnels. He'd been around the same course many times, sometimes more than once in a day. Every crevice and muddy puddle of it was familiar to him. He wondered how long the test would run for. They would make it long enough to weed out the weakest, to see how their conditioning programs had fared. Harren considered his chances. They were good. Standing still and shuddering in the cold was the worst part. His muscles would respond once he was moving. Trevi leaned close.
"Good luck," he said.
Harren nodded in response. His stomach was too knotted for him to speak. It felt as if the tension in his muscles might spread to his heart. The gong sounded. The boys broke into a run. None of them sprinted, for they all knew how arduous the test would be. None of them dawdled, for they all knew what the punishments were for insufficient effort. All 24 of them jogged out onto the track, quickly settling into the rhythms they had been taught, letting their breathing adjust, inhaling through their nostrils and exhaling through half-open mouths. They stayed together in a loose huddle, padding around the damp surface in worn training shoes. Harren fell into his stride in the middle of the group. He let his mind glide into the semi-aware state that it always adopted during endurance exercises, repeating the empty phrase over and over again in time with his thudding feet.
"No backward step. No backward step."
Some boys started struggling immediately. They'd let their muscles go cold during the long wait, or were underhydrated, or were carrying injuries from previous sessions. Harren gave them no thought. He ran steadily, scaling the ramps, leaping over the pits, hauling himself up the walls and throwing himself down on the far side. He slipped easily into the run rhythm, feeling his heart and lungs match the metronomic beat he played in his mind. His mind wandered. It was hard not to remember his previous life, his red-cheeked mother with her blonde hair in a tight bun, his father with his thinning pate, his older sister with her quiet voice and quick eyes. The exercises were designed to help you to forget the ones you'd left behind, but memories would come back when you least expected them to. Harren sometimes wondered if they would ever really leave. Perhaps after ascension they would. For all he knew, ascension wiped all your memories, scraping your mind clean.
"No backward step,"
he kept running. Loops of the track passed in sequence, over and over again. He began to feel the first stabs of muscle burn. He felt old scars in his knees ache. He felt his lungs throb as he drew cold air in deeply. Circuits passed by, merging into one another. After 2 hours, the first boy dropped out, shuddering as he tried to inhale, his limbs trembling in the rain. Attendants helped him up and carried him away. Harren allowed himself a flicker of surprise. Surprisingly weak. Perhaps he'd been sick, though it had surely ended his quest for ascension. What would happen to him now? They had never been told. Perhaps they sent you home. Perhaps they didn't.
"No backward step."
The next one dropped out much later. Then several gave out, all of them collapsing in little exhausted bundles. They were whisked away. Harren found himself at the front of the group after that. He maintained his pace, careful not to speed up. He attacked the ramps hard, recovering on the far side. He felt his feet become heavier, his chest muscles tighter. He became light-headed and sensed the first surges of nausea gather. More loops passed, one after the other, hypnotic in the rain. Amada was next to go, his thin face drawn and agonized. Kennet followed shortly after. Then they were dropping like flies, stumbling into the water or slumping by the side of the track. Harren got weaker. Breathing became harder. His feet ached as they hit the floor. His knees spiked with every impact. Still, the second gong didn't sound. He began to yearn for it. Trevi was on his shoulder by then. Harren caught a glimpse of his face, a rictus of pain. Barely half a dozen still ran with the group. Two more hobbled after them, a long way back. The pain intensified. More time passed, dragging as if mired in tar.
"No backward step,"
His vision shrunk down to a long black tunnel. His pulse thumped, muffled in his temples. He lost sight of Trevi. He lost sight of everything. He kept moving automatically, cut loose from conscious thought. His jaw hung slack. His arms went limp, bashing against his thighs as he stumbled onwards. He thought he heard the gong, then realized his mind was playing tricks on him. He kept going, head down, feet dragging. A wall approached, blunt and black in the downpour. He tried to jump up against it, but missed the handholds. He scrabbled briefly, unable to see anything but overlapping circles of red and black, before his frozen fingers lodged into a crack of masonry. He tried to pull up, to drag himself to the top. But something was wrong. His feet found no purchase. The rock-crete blocks were too smooth, too curved. It took him a long time to hear the laughter. It took him a long time to realize that he'd veered far off the track. It took him even longer to realize that it was no wall he was trying to climb up, but a giant figure of a warrior in white armor and with glowing slits for eyes. Harren collapsed at the giant's feet, bewildered. The giant gazed down at him, immense and immobile. His outline shone dully from the flood lumens, glossy with trailing beads of moisture.
"Good," said the giant, amused.
His voice was a low machine growl.
"You do not give up easily."
Harren felt himself begin to faint and squeezed his muscles to push blood to his head, desperate not to shame himself. He was shaking uncontrollably. Dimly, he heard attendants running towards him. He wondered how far he'd got before his body had given up. The giant crouched down beside him, even stooped. He was huge. Harren saw a massive curved shoulder guard hover above him. It had a wolf's head painted on it, set against a crescent moon.
"Last on your feet," said the giant. "Keep that up, and you'll be wearing this armor. 16th Legion, lad."
Harren felt consciousness slipping away. His body ached. His limbs were quickly freezing. His lungs were raw with gasping. He'd never been in such pain. But as he gazed up at the wolf moon device and heard the vox-filtered voice of the giant, imagining himself in a similar suit of power armor, imagining himself marching to war amid the ranks of those peerless fighters, he couldn't help but let slip a smile of pure happiness.
"I will become one of you,"
he thought as his body seized up at last.
"For Horus. For Horus and the Emperor, I will become one of you."
Tamu looked out across the Altak, feeling the wind brush against his bald head. Unconsciously, he flexed his fingers, feeling the tough skin of his hands move. His chest ached still. The last implantation had not gone smoothly, and he had woken 6 days ago on the operating table to see the floor of the laboratorium covered in his own blood. The apothecary, an owlish Khitan from Choktan named Jeljin, had been concerned for a while.
"I have seen it before," he'd said,
running a scanner over Tamu's puckered scar tissue and shaking his head.
"The flesh of Chogaris, it is tough. But these things were designed for Terrans. We are learning, but it all takes time."
Tamu had listened silently, gritting his teeth against the pain and refusing analgesics. Jeljin hadn't really been talking to him. Few of the full Battle Brothers ever did. What could they have to say to a 16-year-old stripling, raw from the grassland, eyes still wide with what he had witnessed in the monastery? Tamu doubted that they ever remembered their own ascensions. He'd heard it said the memory faded quickly. Now Tamu had recovered most of his strength. He stood on the edge of the cliffs below the Cum Carter fortress, breathing deeply again. It already hurt less. Below him, 50 meters down, where the crumbling rocks of the monastery bastion met the Altak, the plains began. Ridged at first like sand dunes, then breaking into the eye-aching flatness of the eternal grass. Blue-green, glossy,
rustling as the wind eddied across it. The sky arched above, pale and unbroken, bright with diffused sunlight. On the far horizon, he could see the eggshell smudge of the Ulav range, just a whisper against the curve of the world. Tamu narrowed his eyes. He was a year away from receiving his oculobe implants, after which he knew his eyesight would rival that of the Berkuts, the hunting raptors that circled the high airs. Of all the changes, he yearned for that one the most. He yearned for the day when he would gaze out across the empty land and see each blade of grass picked out sharply, like a frond of steel.
As for now, I am half finished, he thought. Half boy, half man. Half man, half god. Everything is incomplete.
He smiled. He liked those contrasting pairs. He would find a use for them in a poem, and that would please the training masters, who like to encourage the aspirants to adopt one of the noble pursuits. Most chose hunting. Some, Korchin calligraphy. Only a few had the patience for the spare, hard, compact forms of Psi verse, and so they had encouraged Tamu particularly strongly.
Half boy, half man, half god.
He heard footsteps and listened for the tread signature. Targutai Yasugi was coming down the citadel steps to join him. Tamu turned his head, watching the worn earth edges of the monastery's foundations soar away above him. Flags rustled at its summit, the red and gold of the Khans, the black and silver of the Imperium. Yasugai made his way slowly down the wide stairway. Clear sunlight glinted from his armour. Tamu waited patiently, bowing respectfully as the Zadyin Aga approached.
"Feeling better?" asked Yasugai, looking at him intently.
"The implant took," Tamu replied. "I was told you were near death."
Tamu grinned.
"I eluded it."
Yasugai returned the smile. It did not take much for him to smile. Ever since Tamu had been plucked from the Altak and taken to the monastery, Yasugai's smile had been somewhere close by him, emerging from weather-beaten flesh, the colour and toughness of beaten bronze.
"I remember when I found you," Yasugai said. "You had a gash at the back of your head that should have killed you, and you tried to fight me the first chance you got."
Tamu bowed his head, embarrassed.
"I did not know. I was pleased. It made me think I had made the right choice."
Yasugai's smile faded a little.
"I will not pretend I do not grieve when our choices are wrong."
Tamu felt self-conscious. He remembered very little of the time after Yasugai had taken him. He did not like being reminded of it. He looked down at his hands. They were too big, like most of his body. He already had the bulky frame of a grown man and knew that it would keep getting bigger. The stimulants and accelerants he took in his food made his muscles bunch and swell. At times he felt freakish, like a changeling left out on the steppe to die, all awkward limbs and fleshy growths. At others he felt invincible, bursting with power and energy, and desperate to find an outlet for it.
"I have a long way to go,"
Tamu said.
"I do not think we will lose you now. I have a superstition."
"About me?"
Tamu asked.
"About the universe," smiled Yasugai. "Have I never told you of it? The principle of the minor flaw?"
Tamu shook his head.
"A foolish thing," said Yasugai. "I found myself believing that every soul should possess a flaw. Some exhibit it early and survive. Others do not. And it grows, and when it emerges, it has become monstrous. The greater the soul, the greater the monster. So it is better to have had your brush with destruction now."
Tamu squinted at Yasugai in the sun. He didn't know whether he was being serious.
Then I no longer need worry? Of course you should. And you, Sergeant Aga? My flaws were identified a long time ago. And the Khan?
Yusugai looked at him sternly.
He will be an exception to the rule.
They stood together for a little longer. Yusugai was a companionable soul. It was strange to think of him as he really was, a master of the arts of heaven, a Zadyn Aga of prodigious power. Acolytes whispered along the corridors of the monastery that Tagutai Yusugai had killed more men than any of the legion, other than the great Khan himself. Tamu believed it. He was not fooled by the soft voice or the sparkling eyes in that good-natured face. Yusugai was the embodiment of the legion's core principles. He killed without rancor, without angst, without obsession. His station did not require him to take an interest in the aspirants he had selected, especially as the demands of the crusade took him away from Chogoris often. The fact that he paid his charges so much close attention had taught Tamu a lesson, one that he had absorbed far more readily than most others, that warriors need not be brutes.
"I am leaving soon," Yusugai said. "I do not expect to return before you complete ascension, and by then your name will no longer be Tamu." "Where are you going?"
Yusugai glanced up at the ice-blue sky.
"Where the war leads."
Tamu felt a sharp pang of jealousy. Ever since he had begun his training, he had burned to leave the home world. He dreamed often of other worlds, of stars burning in the vaults of the deep void, of combat against real enemies rather than drill drones and sparring partners. Yusugai gave him a reassuring look.
"We are inducting more Chogorians every cycle. Soon we will outnumber the Terrans. Perhaps it is unworthy to admit this, but I look forward to the day. The Khan is one of us, after all."
"He was not born here."
"All the same."
Tamu considered what Yusugai had said.
"Do they follow the same training?"
"Terrans? I doubt it." "Is it easy to fight with them?" "Easy enough."
Yusugai shot him a wry look.
"We are all united now, of course. All united under one throne."
Tamu gazed back out over the plains.
"I can only imagine terror."
"You may yet witness it."
"If I survive ascension."
"I told you. You will."
Tamu flexed the muscles of his chest, breathing in heavily and feeling his ribs ache.
"It cannot come soon enough."
"Patience,"
said Yusugai, resting a gauntlet on Tamu's shoulder.
"Work. Study. Live. Take advantage of this time. Once you are in the Ordu, you will have no space for anything but warcraft."
Tamu had been told the same thing many times. It had always troubled him.
"Then I wonder why they make us learn so much."
"It is important," said Yusugai. "I am glad you are a poet. Only poets can be true warriors."
"Do the Terrans think the same?"
Yusugai laughed.
"I do not know," he said. "One day you will meet one. When you do, ask him."
Harren stepped forward as the door slid open. The chamber beyond was dark, lit only by slants of orange light from the neon night sky. Streaks of rain trickled down the outside of armour-glass windows. It had been raining for a long time. It always seemed to be raining in Imamdo. The man behind the pedestal desk looked up at him as he entered.
"Harren Svensson?"
he asked. Harren clicked his heels together and stood rigidly.
"Sir!"
The man looked Harren up and down. His flesh was grey and he looked tired. A glitter of augmetics ran down his right cheek, breaking the skin and pinning tight under his jaw. One eye glowed a soft red. The other was natural.
"Your time here is complete," he said. "Are you prepared to serve?"
"I am."
The words made Harren swell with pride. The first stage, the selection, the physical conditioning, was over. He felt strong. His lean, immature limbs had hardened. His chest had broadened. More would come. The gene therapy, the psycho conditioning, and then finally, the implants that would make him one with the Legion. The man looked down at the desk. Runes scrolled down its reflective surface.
26ths out of 32 in your cadre. It was a good cadre. You have nothing to be ashamed of.
Thank you.
But it presents us with a problem.
Harren felt a twist of unease. Something in the man's cold, clipped voice suddenly made him nervous.
The Lunar Wolves had marked you for selection. But that means nothing until they come to collect, said the man. They exceeded their targets, which is not easy. Other legions have not been so successful. Some are under strength. If you had made 25th or higher, then it would have been different. But, as it stands...
Harren listened warily. He remembered the Wolfmoon device on the Space Marine's shoulder guard. He'd seen the same image 1,000 times in the years since, plastered over every surface in the training facilities, the Medicaid bays, the tactical lecture halls, the dormitories. He'd begun seeing it in his sleep.
You did everything necessary,
the man went on, methodically, coolly. Harren felt his cheeks begin to flush.
Reassignments happen. They are nothing to be ashamed of.
Reassignment? The word hit Harren like a blow. He heard his blood pumping hard in his ears. After so many years dealing with the rigid ways of the selection facility, he should have known better than to question. But the words came out anyway.
I do not wish to be reassigned, he said.
The man flicked his tired eyes, one brown, one red, up at him, a thin eyebrow raised by a fraction.
Are we here to facilitate your wishes, Svensellen?
No, sir.
Is that what we are here for? To facilitate the wishes of our aspirants?
No, sir.
Others have been reassigned. Do you think they felt differently?
I doubt it, sir.
And do you think we made special dispensation for any of them?
No, sir.
Sorry, sir, I...
The man lowered his eyes. Harren trailed off.
One place away.
One place.
The man ran a pair of metal-tipped fingers over the desktop, dragging rune clusters to and fro absently on the touch-reactive surface.
You will make the transfer to Luna in 2 weeks. Onward transport will be arranged there. You will complete your remaining program with your new Legion. They have been given a full record of your progress with us. You will be welcomed. Our stock is highly prized.
Harren almost blurted out another protest.
Is there no alternative? No other way? I can retake the tests. Is this even permitted? I've absorbed the doctrine, the training, the methods...
The man seemed to read his mind, and his hands stopped moving.
You have at least 10 years before you are due to enter a battle company, he said. You will adjust. In the decades to come, you will forget that this was even an issue.
That was perhaps meant as a kindness. Harren drew in a long breath through his nostrils, keeping his shoulders in place, his back straight. He wanted to be sick.
Thank you, sir, he said. And is it permitted?
It is. You are assigned to the 5th Legion.
The 5th Legion. The White Scars. The Mystic Savages. It could have been worse. The Wolves of Fenris, maybe. Or the Warhounds. Still, the White Scars.
I know nothing of the 5th,
Harren said.
You'll learn. A liaison officer will join you on Luna, but you should commit to study before then.
Harren remained where he was, static, lost for words. The man looked up at him again.
"Do you need anything else?"
he asked.
"I don't know,"
said Harren, his mind drifting.
"Do I?"
The man thought for a moment. Something clicked in his augmetic like clockwork.
"You'll change your name," he said. "That is one thing I do know. They are given new names on entry to the Legion."
"A new name?"
said Harren absently.
"What kind of name?"
The man shrugged.
"I have no idea," he said. "You have 10 years to find out."
Tamu moved forward. The lights in the hangar were bright, and the rows of warriors in white armour were dazzling, as pristine as the snows on the Ulav in winter. Every so often he had to remind himself that he was one of them.
One of them. One of the Legion. A space marine.
Hasik Noyan Khan stood before him. He held Tamu's gaze for a moment, scrutinizing him. Tamu looked back into Hasik's brown eyes fearlessly. Despite Hasik's immense and gilt-edged Terminator warplate, despite the thousands of warriors standing to attention in the Durgan's cavernous interior, despite the vast display of weaponry around him, he felt nothing but joy.
"Tamu," said Hasik.
His voice was a rumbling baritone, made harsh by more than 60 years' service in the Legion. It was rumoured he was one of the very first to be raised from Chogoris, just as Yusugai had been. Looking up at his hard, ravaged features, Tamu could believe it.
"Talskar."
Tamu shook his head.
"Kinzan,"
he said, referring to the clan he had been taken from on Chogoris. The Talskar were the great Khan's people, but many dozens of nations had been subsumed into the Legion. They were all white scars now.
"Show me," said Hasik.
Tamu bared his left cheek, exposing the flesh to the hard light of the overhead lumens. Hasik ran an armoured finger down the raised flesh of the scar that stretched from Tamu's cheekbone down to his chin. Hasik nodded, satisfied, and reached behind him. An adjutant delivered up the chosen weapon, a two-handed Guan Dao glaive with a disruptor-edged blade. Hasik held it before Tamu as an executioner might, poised to swing.
"You were Tamu of the Kinzan," he said.
His voice filled the huge space.
"Now you are of the Ordu of Jagatai, and your old life is no more. What name do you take to mark your ascension?"
Tamu had spoken it out loud many times in the days prior to the ceremony, getting used to the feel of it on his lips, trying to ease the strangeness of the transition. When he replied, it still felt jarring.
"Shiban," he said.
Hasik handed him the glaive.
"You are one with the Ordu, Shiban. You are of the Brotherhood. You will not leave it except in death. May it be long in coming, and may glory accompany your deeds until that day."
Shiban took the glaive in both hands. The weapon felt pleasingly heavy in his gauntlets. He ran his eyes up and down the blade, noting the glyphs on the metal, the gilding on the disruptor casing. It was perfect.
"For the great Khan,"
he said, bowing respectfully, his heart's full to bursting. It took more than 10 years. In all, nearly 14 passed before Harren was ready. The physical changes were hard, the surgery painful. The cultural ways of the Fifth Legion were too different to be absorbed readily, and he had to learn Korchin, the strange language of Chogoris. That alone tested him, despite his improved recall and mental agility. Getting his tongue around such alien sounds remained a challenge. It was not just a matter of vocabulary and grammar. Korchin had inflections and subtleties not shared by any Terran language. His first tutor, a stocky woman from the Megagrav world of Beaufay, had developed her own theory on the origin of the differences.
"They are a poetic people," she had told him. "Their home is an empty place. It loosens their imagination, so they fill their minds with words."
She had curled her lip. She did not especially admire Trigorians.
"They are prolix, and they do not learn Gothic well. Hence all this fuss."
"Why is that?" Harren had asked.
"I do not know. Perhaps they do not know themselves."
Harren mastered the speech in the end, just like all the other Terrans who had been inducted into the Legion. The inductees studied together, poring over curved character clusters and diacritics, rolling their eyes at the complexities and cementing friendships in the face of adversity. Many of the others had been taken from the Asiatic hive clusters. Harren disapproved of that. After Unity, the Imperium was meant to have moved beyond racial and ethnic stereotyping. So the fact that the Fifth Legion remained mired in the physiognomic traits of their backwater world was an irritant. Much else about them was an irritant also. Their archaic customs, their introversion, their exceptionalism. They placed enormous importance on speed, on being the first into combat, on being the first out, on movement, on shams and counterfeits. "Withdraw, then return," they told him, over and over again. "No backward step," he would occasionally remind himself. As time went on, though, Harren learned to admire their tenacity, their toughness, their energy. The combat drills were hard, just as hard as they had been with the Lunar Wolves. The Skars could fight, that was certain, and he took some solace in that. His initial orientation took place in the Sol system. Then he was moved out with the others to off-world training facilities, a decommissioned battleship over Vormal, a jet bike squadron billeted temporarily on the lead-hard plains of Yem, specialist combat units deployed on the aqua world of Kale 9, and the gas giant Revelet Tarides. He performed well throughout. The Trigorian instructors were fulsome in their praise, unlike the grudging hard men of the Lunar Wolves.
"Take pleasure in your prowess," they would chide him, mocking his earnestness. "A warrior is a blessed thing, the most fortunate of creatures, gifted by heaven with unmatched power. It would be polite to acknowledge that from time to time."
Harren did his best, but their cheerfulness never sat well with him.
"They take so little seriously," he thought. "They are playing at this."
Of course they weren't. He knew that. But the nagging accusation would not leave him.
"When are we going to Trigorus?"
he had asked them near the end. Tajik, his last instructor, had shaken his scarred head.
"We will not go."
"So I will never see the homeworld?"
"You will, just not now."
Harren had frowned.
"It seems strange not to visit the centre."
"It is not the centre,"
said Tajik, lapsing into inscrutability as white scars were prone to do.
"It is where we are based,"
insisted Harren, using "we" as he tried to do always.
"We are based nowhere," said Tajik, smiling. "Nowhere is our home, and everywhere is. That is the difference between us and the others. You will learn it."
Harren wanted to ask more questions, but merely bowed and let the matter drop. Sometimes it was easier that way. And so, at last, ascension arrived. The final ceremony took place in the humid equatorial zone of Taranagia. 200 aspirants lined up on a rock-crete square as hot rain whipped and skipped across them, each decked out in newly crafted power armour in the Fifth Legion colours of ivory, red and gold. Harren stood among them, feeling much as he had on the sodden training quads of Imamdo. But now, of course, he was far from being a boy on the cusp of a new life. He was a man. more than a man. A demigod, an angel, a guardian of Terra's new order. Jemulan Noyan Khan had made planetfall to oversee the ascension. Like all Chogorians, he was compact and wiry, even in the standard battle armor he'd opted for on that day. As Jemulan reached Haran's place in the line, Haran noticed that he was taller than the old Lord Commander. That unnerved him somewhat.
"Haran," said Jemulan, "which part of Terra?"
"Scandmark," said Haran.
"Good," said Jemulan. "Hard country, I know it. Show me."
Haran bared his left cheek. The cut had been made just a few weeks earlier by his own hand and was still tender. He had pushed the blade deep, keen that the results would be worthy of a Trigorian's approval. Jemulan nodded, satisfied, and reached behind him. An adjutant delivered up the chosen weapon, a power sword in the 5th Legion's Tulwar styling. Jemulan held it before Haran as an executioner might, poised to swing.
"You are Haran of the Scandmark," he said. His voice sounded flat in the humid air. "Now you are of the Ordu of Jagatai, and your old life is no more. What name do you take to mark your ascension?"
Haran had struggled for a long time to think of one. He had taken advice from his instructors and had spent hours poring over Korchin almanacs and lexicons. In the end, he had chosen a name from Talskar mythology, a servant of an ancient Khan who had returned from 100 years in the wilderness, looking as young as the day he had left. The symbolism seemed appropriate.
"Torgun," he said.
Jemulan handed him the talwar.
"You are one with the Ordu, Torgun. You are of the Brotherhood. You will not leave it except in death. May it be long in coming, and may glory accompany your deeds until that day."
Torgun took the tulwar. He would need time to get used to it. He was still more proficient with straighter blades.
"For the great Khan," he said,
bowing respectfully and trying to banish for the final time the residual memory of a white-armored giant in the rain, looking down on him with the wolf moon icon on his shoulder guard.